Fuck pain. Fuck heartbreak. I'm still in love with life.
From the multicultural headquarters of the future capital of the free-thinking states of America known as Los Angeles, this is the Drunken Taoist Podcast. Ever bonus episode brought to you by your fellow listener Chimey Motsum of Australia to honor the passing of his father. We called on none other than our old pal Duncan Trussell to help us out. We'll be discussing bike riding with a 40-year-old body, the importance of treating others as equals, and getting ready to chase the dragon as Duncan gets ready for his cosmic visit to the Ramada, Peru. And now, asking you all to spread the word that corporations are not people, I'm Rich Evers. And my partner in crime, Daniele Bellelli, the savage philosopher, the middle finger of the gods. Bury your treasure, put your kids to bed, and most importantly, hide your women. The Drunken Taoist Podcast begins now.
Welcome back, everybody. A special bonus episode, and this is kind of a special one this time because it's by request of one of your fellow listeners. Apparently his father passed away and he wanted to find some way to pay tribute to him, and he thought his own little special episode of the Drunken Taoist Podcast would be the way to do it. So without any further ado, I will introduce you to my pal across the way, Mr. Daniele Bellelli.
Yeah, how cool is this? I mean, it's like we had the special episodes before where some company or business decided to sponsor a special thing, which was great, and we loved it, and we deeply appreciate that somebody would believe in us and want to support us in that fashion, and, you know, we got them some attention to their products. It's beautiful. You know, I love it. This is even crazier. There's absolutely nothing to sell. This is somebody who, in this case, Mr. Chimey Motsum out of Australia and his wife, Catrice.
The fine folks who sent us the kangaroo balls.
Yes, the same fine folks who sent us a kangaroo balls bottle opener that was used during the Chris Ryan episode. That was glorious. And come back with a vengeance now for sponsoring this episode in a way that really is, you know, sponsors normally, there's the connotation of I do it, supporting you, and we got attention to something that we need to sell. In the case of this story, the fact that Chimey decided that for his father passing, he wanted to sponsor an episode of The Drunken Taoist just because, kind of just as a honoring of the memory of his father, and that's it. There's, you know, we're gonna put in the episode notes the website that his father was working on where that contains a lot of information about permaculture and things like that. But again, there's nothing to sell on the website. It's just information and cool stuff, and that's it. So,
and needless to say, the pressure was on. We were like, what to do?
Yes, because, I mean, we definitely wanted to do something nice. This is too cool. I mean, it's like, really, you sponsor something just, I don't know. It's almost hard to talk about because it's so cool. Yeah. I ran out of words on this, but... And we had one of our faithful allies come to the rescue with us to give us a few minutes of his time. Mr. Duncan Trussell joining us today. Yeah. Which is great because Duncan has been crazy busy lately. You know, it's like normally he replied to my email right away, called back. He's like, he's been missing in action. It take me like 30 emails to get to him, all of that, because I'm guessing the man has been quite busy. And yet he did make 45 minutes of his time, run into traffic to get here, Chat with us, make this happen. So yes, this is not going to be a long one, but it's a good one. And thank you.
Chock full of awesomeness.
Yeah.
And it, literally, the moment he sat down when he got here, we rolled till the second he had to leave at noon straight up.
Yeah, because we had no time.
There was no time.
So it was like, hey, Duncan, okay, put the things on. Let's go. Okay, is it recording? No. Let's open it.
So, Chimey, to your father, Jeff, you know, many thanks.
Yes.
And this does honor his memory quite well. And what better guy to have on? Duncan's often spoken of his mother's death. Mm-hmm. I even talk about my own father's death in this one because it sort of seemed appropriate. So, and it's not really a downer. It's just kind of fun. But
speaking of not a downer, one thing that Chimey said about his father, by the way, just for the sake of honoring or however you may be, let me fuck up his name as usual, because the name is G-E-O. OFF. So some say Jeff, Joff, Geoff. I don't know. I don't speak any of this stuff, so it all looked mysterious to me. But in any case, one thing that Jimmy mentioned was the fact that his dad, as an all-time true hippie, was down. He ended up dying during an accident when he was cutting down a tree, and the tree fell on him. And Jimmy thought he was, again, see the weirdness of it all. The guy, Jimmy was mentioning how it's kind of ironic, like the universe has a sense of humor, does a tree-hugging hippie got killed by a tree. And at the same time, you know...
That's too perfect.
And, you know, he's not saying it in a disrespectful way, because clearly, you know, he loved his dad and he's doing this thing in the memory of. And at the same time, you know, find the humor even in tragedy. That's always an excellent sign.
No, of, nothing better than an awesome story for your way out the door.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there was that. But a couple of things he wanted to mention. He was particularly excited and he did want us to include this in the description about the Drunken Taoist t-shirts. He said they were half of the reason for him wanting to sponsor the episode. He just loved them. And, oh, by the way, Jim, I sent you a couple already, but I know there are some of the old ones that I forgot about, so I'll send you those. And then he has been quite excited about his new Datsusara hoodie, so he wanted to give them a shout about that as well. And just the idea, you know, part of where he was coming from and part of where he found the money to sponsor the episode and everything was sort of this whole notion of bettering yourself, where he was out of a job for a while, started doing some other stuff that brought him money and kind of help him explore other ways of where he thinks his life may go, other ways of just trying stuff for yourself in terms of constant self-improvement as the way to go. So that's where he wanted to put the accent on. Having said that, I would say it's time to roll with Mr. Duncan Trussell, so let's make it happen.
Here he comes.
Rolling.
Thanks for coming by.
Ah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Good to see you.
The man himself, the man who haunted you with tales of his used flashlights abandoned in the shower for weeks.
Oh, God.
The man who enlightened you with deep mystical insights.
Yes.
He's the one and only Duncan Trussell.
Hare Krishna.
How are you, man?
Great, man. How are you?
Other than running up here, opening myself, I took like a giant fall while running and just opened myself up. So this is literally a podcast made with blood.
Aren't they all?
Which, yes. This one in a more less metaphorical and more literal sense. But other than that, what's going on with you, man?
I hurt myself yesterday, too. I fell off a skateboard.
In a Johnny Cash kind of way? Like, I hurt myself today?
No, and like, I was trying to show off to my girlfriend. So I got on a skateboard and at my friend's house. And then as I'm standing there, stupidly proud that I could even stand on a skateboard, which is nothing to be proud of, but I think I was proud because she couldn't really do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, look at this. I can stand. And then as a joke, I'm like, I think I'm better than Tony Hawk. And it's like a thunderbolt from the universe. I don't know exactly what happened, but I just fell, like just fell right off the skateboard at that very moment. If only she'd been taping it. And just, you know, 40-year-old man having a skateboard accident, it made my day. Because it's like, oh, thank God I'm 40. I'm falling off a skateboard still. That's great. Life's good. Injuries are good. You know, there's something weird about injuries. That's why kids like Band-Aids. There's like some kind of thing that you learn from an injury that you don't get from anything else.
So, okay. In that case, joy or joy. Yes, blood is flowing and life is good.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, because everyone's trying to avoid that, you know, the injury, getting damaged and hurt. That's the whole, that's like the entire story of most TV commercials and our society is all about safety, but...
Some of them, there's something where somebody's got a dog on an ultralight, and it literally says, do not attempt.
Yeah.
You know, come the fuck on. Or the one where the car is on top of a subway, do not attempt.
Right.
Yeah.
Is it come that far?
Yeah. It's
the pacification of America may be complete.
Well, it's the sad thing about it is that it's what ends up happening is the death rates, if you look at like what's really killing people, it's not driving cars on top of subways or doing tricks that you see in TV or movie. In movies, what's killing people is heart disease.
Right.
So what's generally the thing that's causing people to die in the United States is from being too safe. If you get too safe, that's what really fucking kills you. Sitting around on the couch, not exercising, trying to avoid getting out in the world, trying to avoid the heart pounding. That's the number one death rate. It's not people parachuting. It's not parachuting accidents. Right. It's not bicycle accidents that's killing people.
Well, my doctor recommends lighter Terrington cigarettes because less tar.
Yeah, there
he
you
was
go.
Smoking one when he told me.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's an interesting predicament that we're in here when we're being actually hypnotized into thinking that safety is going to keep us alive longer, when the truth of the matter is safety is the thing that's killing the majority of us.
Well, and already with like the antibacterial soap, that's clearly a bad thing. You have to have a little shit underneath your fingernails if you're going to make it in this world. If you're not prepared for, you know, European SARS or whatever's next by having a little nibble of it, you're fucked.
On that note, you are about to undertake some risky proposition this summer.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, I mean, I don't look at it as... I'm going down to South America to try ayahuasca.
Ooh.
Pretty excited about that. Excited about getting into the wilderness. Excited about whatever that awaits for me on the other side of that. That's going to be really fun. So, yeah, I'm pretty psyched. That's going to be great.
You going with Aubrey?
Yes.
Aubrey Marcos.
Yeah.
Nice. So, your thoughts. Why are you doing that?
Well, you know, I think there are a lot of different reasons. Number one, it's scary and it's fun to like push against those boundaries. Two, I'm able to do it at this point in my life. Like I don't have any obligations.
Sure.
So I can go to the Amazon. Like
right.
I get to go to the fucking Amazon and go down a boat on the Amazon. That's enough. Aside from talking to aliens or experiencing the whatever that kind of hyperdimensional clarity that they say comes from the ayahuasca experience and the purification and removing the darkness and the heaviness and the anger and the extraction of fear that the thing offers and the experience of your own demise as you're shitting and vomiting and shamans are blowing smoke into your face. I think there's just something fun about seeing the Ramada in Peru or wherever we fly into. I'm pretty excited about that. There's a fucking Ramada out there.
Yeah, but you know, if you want to do that, you go to the Ramada, you go to the beach, you hang out. You know,
well, it's
you're
not
going
just for the Ramada, but I'm to stay at the Ramada, Amazon Ramada. I'm pretty excited about that. Like, what is a Ramada in the Amazon like?
Right.
What's a Ramada in the middle of the most forested part of the world? The most alive place.
Right.
What's that breakfast buffet like? I'm excited about that.
$37 beers for
I bet
sure.
It still sucks. I bet it's still still shitty eggs, but I'm curious about the that. And then of course the it's something that I've been interested in for quite some time, and so it's a cool way to find out what's over there, and then it'll give me something to contemplate for the rest of my life.
I wonder if you'll come back with a new name like Aubrey did.
Yeah,
I don't know. Right.
Oh, yeah, Aubrey was Chris.
His name.
What?
Aubrey's name is Chris. He became Aubrey after the...
Oh, I see.
A weird...
Yeah, I like that. You know, the whole name change thing, it's like so many of people feel trapped in their old identities, and some people try to get out of it with, like, tattoos.
Right.
Some people try to get out of it with, cross... Well, I don't know what they're... politically correct term is, but some people will turn into women.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, you know, there's so many different ways people try to escape from their identity, and in many spiritual traditions, you get a name change once you have an awakening experience.
I foresee a return among us. The next podcast we'll have with this gentleman will be with Priscilla Trussell.
Just the cosmic next. Wanderer, I think, will be nice.
What if it's just a boring name like Mark? My name's
Clive
my
now.
Name's
I learned
Mark.
A lot while I was inside, and Clive just seemed appropriate.
It's just when I went to the DMT realm, it was just pretty much an office building. I had to do copies, and the guy there said my name's Mark. And that was it. He said I was an okay worker, and then I came down.
You did your 10,000 years, you can go home now.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounded incredibly fun. But any particular reason for doing it other than the adventure of it all?
Well, I mean, you know, that's the problem is like, you know, reasons. God damn, reasons fuck things up, you know? It's just sort of like, I don't know. I don't know why. That weird thing, man, where you, I do have reasons for things, but usually those reasons that I have for things aren't, don't ever seem to be what ends up coming from the thing, if that makes any sense at all. So I'm trying to eliminate the reason as much as possible. It seems just kind of like jumping off a ledge into a big green ball of trees and shamans. Right. And that sounds fun.
Okay. It sounds fun. That's the reason. Okay.
Well, no. I mean, I could have like heady reasons for it, to remove the darkness of my heart and open my third eye and see the truth in all things and understand what it is to love for once and improve relationships and, you know, all that stuff.
There you go. That's a good reason.
But the moment you start saying those things, you know, it's almost like, I think you end up, you can, I know that you go into psychedelic experiences with intention, and I'll have some intentions when I go into it, but man, whenever, you know, God, how awful is it when you like go to hang out with someone and they've got an intention?
Sounds like fun is good enough.
Yeah.
That's plenty.
But you know, like when you're with someone and they have an intention with you, they have an intention. They're not just there to hang out with you. They're there because they have an intention and they want something. They're there to get something and you know it. And you're like, God damn it, I just want
to ask for the $50 to be on your way.
Drink some fucking beers and enjoy the goddamn night. You know, that kind of, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's like so in the same way, I hope that though I do have all these things, I like to walk through walls. I'd love it if I could have like 30-minute orgasms. It would be fun to like have be able to write a book. It'd be amazing to all these things that you want. It's this idea of like going to the thing and being like, oh, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, beautiful universe, for creating this crazy chance for me to go up this arterial waterway in the middle of the basically the vagina of Earth and like experience whatever it is that's on the other side. That's enough, right? God damn it.
Wow. How long is the voyage up the river? Is it like full Mosquito Coast, going to invent ice on the way sort of thing?
Here's all I know is I trust Aubrey.
Yeah.
And that's it. So I don't know much more than that. I skimmed the email about what we're doing. Like, I got to go look at it because I need to, like, make sure what shots I need to get or whatever it is I need to do. But, like, I skimmed the email, and that's it. It's like, all right, well, I'm sure whatever Aubrey's, you know, I think Aubrey knows what he's doing, and the energy that guy puts out is indisputably tranquil, and he has, like, a good heart, so... And I've been wanting to go to ayahuasca. So it's like, all right, Ramada, Peru. All right, that's it. Go there. That's all I have to do is make it to the Ramada. I can't remember in Peru. Or I don't even know which part. I think it's Peru.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Serious?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Oh, my God.
Now, Aubrey, when Aubrey tells his story, he said there were three shamans. One's like, I will show you your inner self. And one's like, I will help guide you to a better nature. And the third one's like, I will show you the dragon. Dragon. Any idea you're going dragon?
Well, no. I just want to have. I mean, whichever one is the most is going to like be fun. Like, I'm tired of being heavy all the time, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
aren't you picking the wrong medicine for it though? Because ayahuasca, I mean, under all the reports, many words can be used for it. Fun is probably not one of the ones that.
Well, you know, I mean, I fell off the skateboard. That was fun, and a lot of people don't say that's fun. Or,
so
you know,
since you're a twisted motherfucker with a strange sense of fun, then yes, okay.
Well, I mean, what's fun? I mean, I don't mean like I want to go play tennis with some praying mantis space alien thing.
The typical image that anybody, when they think fun, they think, okay, tennis with a praying male. Yeah, of course.
They always have two rackets is the problem with those bastards.
It's just, you know, man, it's like a lot of things that what I love about Ram Dass and like Jack Kornfield and a lot of the people from that camp is they approach the whole thing with this amazing lighthearted spirit, this beautiful buoyancy that's so amazing. And there's not a, even though, you know, you can listen to like any of them talk about death, which is for many people the heaviest trip to get into, and the way that they talk about it is buoyant and alive and hilarious. Right. And well, I was just listening to Jack Kornfield, and he's like, when they're talking about when someone dies, and they ask, "Well, what did he leave?" And Kornfield's like, "Well, he left everything, because that's what you leave is everything." But he says it in a really funny way, you know. It's like describing the hilarious attachment that we have to our bodies. And anyway, I don't want to, like, if I was like, I am going to South America to find my true nature and connect with the earth again.
Yeah, that's going to be disappointment.
It's just... Ugh.
If you can get into that mindset you have, when you tell the awesome story of swimming with Ram Dass, if you can put yourself in that place before you take that first dose, man, you're going to have a fantastic time.
I have a feeling it doesn't matter, man. I have a feeling like I could put myself in that state. I could put myself in like being like grieving my mom. I could put myself in the state of being anxious over existence, whatever it is. And I think, based on what I've heard about this stuff, it is so potent that it's like, okay, well,
nice try.
That's doesn't matter at all. Let's push that curtain back. All right, here's another.
On to the slide of thorns. Good luck.
I think, man, all I know is that if you go there with some like respect for it and a healthy amount of, as they say, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. You know, that idea where it's like, okay, I'm not going here. When I'm saying I'm going there with a feeling of wanting to have fun, I don't mean to be disrespectful. I mean, I do understand the potency of this substance, but it's also, I just don't want to go there with it. Like, you know, like when a distant relative comes to your house and just wants to talk about their fucking cancer. You know, it's like that thing. When you get around people and they're so fucking heavy, and I don't want to bum out ayahuasca. I don't want to come to the party all,
right.
all like... Oh, fucking world is so hard. I don't know. I don't know. I'm probably going to get spanked by it just for yapping like this.
I had an image when you were saying, oh, I don't know, I just trust Aubrey. I had this mental image of Aubrey somewhere going, can you believe this crazy bastard?
Spit take.
Got another one.
Yeah, we got, here comes two kidneys.
Yep.
See, that's the shit that terrifies me. That tequila's pretty good down there in Mexico, but it makes my kidney feel empty.
Yeah, that sound. But, you know, it's funny because a lot of the people that you have talked to on your podcast as well or outside of it, you know, from Aubrey to Amber Lyon to Graham Hancock, you know, all of these people speak about their ayahuasca experience as sort of the transformative experience of their lives in so many ways.
Yes.
So there is this sense of something fucking beyond amazing that is in a way, yeah, there's no point talking about because it's either you know what you're talking about because you've gone through it or you haven't, in which case
it's death, apparently. Yeah, it's right. They call it the vine of death. Death, 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 death. Death keeps coming up so much around the thing, it sounds like a fucking haunted mansion ride, but right. That's only if you've been conditioned to believe that death is the in our culture, death is the, in a movie, what's the worst thing that could, in all horror movies, if like you remove the fear of death from people in a horror movie, then what do you have? Just some kind of athletic, like basically a weird kind of game of tag that involves machetes or something. The moment you remove the fear of death, it's just like, whatever.
That's not how you play tag.
And you usually get laid in the first or second reel, so it's nice all the way around.
What's that?
You usually get laid in the first or second reel, so yeah, it's nice all the way around.
Well, you exactly, right. Yeah, there's always some kind of weird teenage summer camp sex, and then you get chopped up by somebody in a hockey mask. But if you knew after being chopped up that immediately you are going to be reborn or going to some other place or it's a video game and you get to do the whole thing over again or whatever, then the whole chopping up thing would be more of a kind of painful inconvenience than this ultimate blood-curdling, scream-inducing thing. In every spiritual tradition, from Islam to Buddhism, Christianity, death is pretty much the best thing that can happen to you. So you meet people who've had near-death experiences and they're transformed from it. And you meet people who've been around dying people and they're transformed from it. So this whole thing that we're running away from is like, it's like kids running away from an ice cream truck.
Right.
That's what they say. They say that if you just let go of your attachment to your body, then somehow on the other side of that is...
Well, I'm curious because I never met Aubrey or Amber before their experiences. I met them only post, so I don't know what they were like before. I'm curious to see how, you know, how much that would have changed things. But
they're sparkly people.
They are really freaking, like, I hang out maybe twice with Amber Lyon, and good God, she's somebody that, like, I walk into the room, we hang out for a while, and I walk out, and I'm 10 times happier than I was when I walked in.
Yeah, she's got really good energy.
Yeah, she's something else, man. And again, she claimed, who the hell, I'm sure she had it to begin with in a lot of ways, because it's not like, you know, you take ayahuasca and you turn into this amazing person if you are an asshole right before. But clearly, you know, the fact that she claims that the whole experience has done so much for her, that speaks volumes right there.
Yeah, and, yeah. She does, and she does. She definitely walks the walk. There's no question that she's putting out this, like, really radiant, great energy. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's cool, man. I'm very excited about that aspect of it. But, fuck, just going to the Amazon. Whoa.
The Ramada. Okay. Let me know about the eggs at the Ramada.
You're just hearing the way I deal with death. Like, if I'm probably going to die, I'm just going to be thinking about, well, I'm going to get morphine, and that'll be cool. The hospital bed will probably be comfortable. It's going to be interesting to experience that.
Well, it's funny, this episode, oddly enough, is dedicated to a gentleman who sort of sponsored it in honor of his father's passing away. And what you said about the morphine is crazy. My dad was his lungs were literally failing him. And I got a phone call one afternoon. And, oh no, it wasn't an afternoon. It was fucking New Year's Eve. I'm like 19 drinks into New Year's at 2 in the morning when my sister calls me, you've got to get out here right now. I was in Nashville. So 3 hours later, I'm trying to leave the airport, but it's snowing, and they have like one snowplow and a broom out there to clear the runway. So I'm late, missed my connecting flight in Denver, but I'm like OJ, pre-OJ, not murder OJ, but fly to the airport OJ, trying to get to the San Jose there. It's like, I can see it, and it changes. So I've missed my connecting flight. So I'm standing there, and, you know, I've learned along the way, screaming and yelling is not going to do any good at this point. Calmly go, discuss your situation. Ken, is there any way I can get on this plane? No, no, I can't. Just then the jetway opens back up. The toilets have backed up on this plane. They need to get somebody on it. So I'm on the plane, boom, 10 o'clock a.m. I am in San Jose. We're in the hospital room, and I walk in the door, and Dad says, oh, shit, you're here. That can't be anything good for me. So it was this crazy thing, and I just tell the story to honor this guy's father as well. But we went in, and for hours we just told, it was me, my mom, and my sister, the four of us, like we haven't had in a long time, and we told silly stories, and we, you know, all that sort of business. He wasn't even supposed to be lucid. He was getting so little oxygen at this point, but he was, and it carried on for a while. And then about 3 in the afternoon, easily the ugliest woman I've ever seen comes in. It's a nurse. And she pulls me aside. She says, you guys are avoiding it. I can help start the conversation if you want me to. And she put us on the pathway that we have to face facts that he's not going to be here in the morning.
Yeah.
And got the conversation started. So from then, he's calling people from his deathbeds to tell them goodbye and how good it was to be friends with them and just amazing things like that. Calls my wife and says, I couldn't have picked better if I was picking myself. So we had this amazing evening, and he passed away, fought all through the night. But one thing he said is that he wanted morphine because he knew his lungs would fail, and he didn't want to drown in his own fluids. Mm. And when he took that first hit of morphine, he leaned back in the comfy chair, in the comfy hospital bed, which was in a pediatric ward, no less, so we could have privacy. He said, oh, yeah, that's the good shit. So anyway, sun comes up, Dad passes away, and just this sort of string of crazy shit went down for the next week. I mean, the very next night was the first thunderstorm in San Jose in like 11 years.
Wow.
When we went to dump him in the ocean, illegally, of course, where he wanted to be, how he wanted to be is the way we did it. It was a wintertime storm socked in the coast. We drive from San Jose all the way down Paso Robles into Cambria. As we make that exit towards the ocean, the rain lets up a little bit. As we approach the fucking coast, the sun breaks out. And for like 30 minutes, an open sky is sitting there with double rainbows. I mean, this is shit you wouldn't dare write.
Yeah,
you could. Because no one would ever believe it. But it's all completely true.
Yeah.
So my sister, my mom, and I took a handful of them. I don't know if people think that's gross, but it doesn't bother me. It's my fucking father of his cremated remains. And took them to the ocean. And they created these swirl patterns that I cannot describe in the ocean. The clouds closed back up, and it rained for 3 more days.
Wow.
So the universe does wink at us at those moments.
Oh, yeah.
Your mother's notion of the holding, I think she called it.
Yeah, being held.
Is pretty incredible, too, because Dad kind of spoke of that as well. When he was bouncing in between, am I back in Vietnam hiding under a tree, or am I being held by my mother? It was this crazy shit as he tried to put his life into balance as the hours were slipping by.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a singularity. You're just going over this waterfall. And as you do it, there's this process that's happening.
Yeah.
It's,
there's the cracks, the fissures in the matrix are definitely wide open when you have moments like that.
Yeah, that's right.
So to anybody who's got a hardcore belief, just have a little bit of flexibility is all I ever ask.
Well, they say, you know, work, if you're really interested in, a spiritual path, one is just work with dying people. Like, don't worry about meditating or reading scriptures. Just get around people who are dying, and you'll get so much more. You get so much more from experience than you do from like putting yourself in experiences like that than you do from reading, obviously. But you don't have to, it doesn't have to be heavy. You don't have to go sit around with dying people, man. You know, just anything that's like whatever it, you know, we're all sort of, it's like dying is the ultimate hatching of the of what you are, the becoming unentangled from this little meaty thing that we think we are. But before that big unentanglement, there's so many little ones that you can start, like so many other knotted things inside that you can just start working on, like so many things where you're like, oh, this is what I'm like. Anything where you're like, well, this is what I'm like.
Yep. Go away from that. Find uncomfortable situations to place yourself in. Not exactly dangerous, but just think, I would never do that. I'd never go square dance into chicken foot on a weekend. Well, fucking go, because it's fun, man, and the people are cool. And I don't know. You did a version of dying that is the most terrifying one of all, that you switch out and your eyes open back up and you're in the seventh grade and you're fucking late for class again.
Yeah.
And you don't even know.
Yeah, that's possible,
that
too.
That rollover is a rough one.
That's rough, man. There's so many theories behind it, but it's like the more you the other funny thing about dying is, you know, the more you get caught up in this moment, it's just the same thing. That it's like your mind has the tendency to get entangled in points, and so you're getting entangled in your destination, you know, like usually people are more entangled by their destination. So the big fear is death. People get entangled in that. You're always thinking about that inevitability, but it's like whenever you just bring it back to the now, then usually you find that there's a automatic form of death that's happened. If you really are just in the present moment, it's like everything that you were up until that point is gone. And if you're really in the moment, then your concept of your future self is gone. And then if you're really, really in the moment, suddenly you're gone and you're like, oh, I get it. It's not that there's a point of death. It's like this whole thing we're in is death. This whole thing is just emptiness, ultimately. That's the idea. It's just emptiness. So, who knows, man? I don't know. I'm very excited about that trip.
And is there a time of a month that we could kind of focus our positive energies your way down south?
Yeah, it's going to be in July.
Cool.
So,
Coming up soon. Ramada, start making the eggs. Nice. What else is going on in life?
I've just, you know, I've been riding I got a bicycle, and so I've gotten addicted to cycling, but not, I do have a 40-year-old body, so it like, you forget, and cycling is so incredibly, such a high, and so fun that, you know, I started taking these longer and longer bike rides, and then finally I did like a 14-mile, 2-hour bike ride, half of it was uphill. I don't think I've ever felt that good physically at the end of that. I was just like, my God, I feel so great. And then sort of the next day, there's this weird pain in my right around my shoulder blade. And then it got worse the next day. And then the next day, it was like I couldn't sleep because it hurt so bad. Had to go. I got it massaged out. She's like, what the fuck happened? Your shoulders are like... are swollen, and it's just because like the way I was holding, learning how to hold myself on the bike, I guess. But anyway, now I'm getting much better, but I've got to wait. But that's been one of the greatest things that's happened to me in recent memory, is just cycling, riding around on a bike. So fun.
Nice. And you're saying you're off to Utah now. Well, by the time we release this, you have been in Utah.
In Utah by the time you hear this. Yeah, I'm going to do stand-up in Utah.
What's the thing that you're saying every time you're about to do a show, you kind of get that tingling nervousness?
Yes.
And again, you know, you have done this by now 72,000 million
many,
shows.
Many times.
You're not exactly the kind of man who has a hard time putting words together in a flow. You have this ability to just make words. What is that scares you? What is that makes you nervous about it?
There's never one thing, you know? It's like there's a whole tangle of things.
And he's got Mormons to deal with this time, so this is going to be triple hard.
Well, here's one thing. When people come to a comedy show, they're paying money to see you perform. Many of them are getting babysitters. There's a 2-drink minimum. Sometimes they fly in to see you. It's a really big night for them. So if I don't respect that, if my being isn't respecting the fact that for a lot of people,
it's a big deal.
It's right. a big deal. And also how like insanely flattering it is to have anyone pay money to listen to you talk.
Right.
How that's just the ultimate compliment. And it's like just for someone, I'm very grateful that that is happening. So because that's one piece of it, which is like, I want this, whatever ends up happening up there on stage, I want it to be better than what they expected.
Sure.
So there's that feeling, like, I just want this to be fucking awesome. I want these people to have a great, you know, a wonderful night I never want to go into it just being like, ugh, here we go.
Another night.
Right. Yeah. Like, I never want to do that. And, but that's sometimes that if you're doing stand up a lot or you know, sometimes your mind will start resisting. But then when you get on stage, it all goes away and it's a beautiful thing and you connect. But the lead up to it for me has always been butterflies. It never goes away. It's always butterflies. No matter what I do to try to like fix that, I can't.
It's always
it's just energy rising.
You know, that's a good thing.
I think it's a great thing.
Totally good thing. The day that goes away is the day you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Because then you're just going to go out and the machine will click on and blah, 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 blah,
yeah.
tonight, you know?
Yeah, that sucks.
Do you riff? Are you like a band with a set list, or do you kind of know what you're going to step in with and just let it flow?
I'm riffing much more these days. I did this live podcast at the Improv, mm-hmm. and then that was purely just like riffing, and then that was really fun. And then I've been doing that more on stage, mixed in with jokes. It's a mix, you know. Riffing is good, but you've got to like, you know, it's that Bill Hicks quote, your jokes are safety parachutes for when your improv isn't working. I think there's something to, you know, one like someone the other night I was performing and I've been working on riffing more, but this guy came up to me, he's like, you're so, you know, you seem so real up there, and that's really cool. And I took that as a huge, huge compliment, because that feeling of that, I think that's when people come to see stand-up, they can sense if someone's being very robotic. And I'm guilty of that, man. Fuck, I'm guilty of that. Of getting caught in a set and just having like 15 minutes of like, yep, just the same thing. It's like you know exactly what you're going to say and turn to the right. And you're doing it out of this weird fear that the moment can't generate its own energy. But then when you start realizing, oh shit, every moment is this like filled with such massive potential energy. And there's comedians who are experts at that, alchemists of extracting the massive energy that's stored up in every moment out, like Tig Notaro. I don't know if you've ever seen her. Wow, man. She is incredible. And when you see her, you don't see the same show ever. It's always different. And she's like she has this wonderful pacing to what she's doing that's so calm and slow and trusting that everything's going to work out. And man, it's a beautiful thing to watch. And a lot of comics that I love seem to do that, you know? So riffing, yes, I do riff. And I do try to like just connect with what's happening with the audience.
The thing that you are saying about the sort of this sense of responsibility of going in and somebody's, you know, it's their one time when they're going to see you. Maybe it's not like they, you know, you the same, you have done shows. There's something that Michael Jordan used to say that, you know, as a basketball player, as not just a basketball player, but the one guy that everybody would go on to watch, playing, including playoffs and stuff, almost 100 games a year. After a while, you get jaded. It's like, it's another damn game. You know, I'm going to put on my show, but, you know, if it's not my best, it's not my best, whatever. You know, I have other 99 chances the rest of the year to do amazing. And this thing was always thinking, I bet there's at least, if nothing else, there's going to be at least one person in the audience who this is going to be their Michael Jordan experience. This is going them coming to see me, putting, as you put, time, energy, money to make it happen. And this is what they are going to remember. They are not going to remember my other 99 games. This is their experience. Yeah. And so I have a responsibility to give 150% of myself to that one person.
Damn right. And don't forget that person represents the exact thing that let you live the most amazing life of all time.
Yep.
You should be bowing down to them. Mm-hmm. When you see a fucking artist who's like doing that awful hierarchical thing where like suddenly audience members are somehow like
the enemy.
Yeah. Not the enemy, but even you know what, that would be kind of interesting if somehow you're a paranoid and you think the audience is your enemy. What's really dismaying is when you see it's not that they're your enemy, it's that they're in some way less than you. Ooh, they're less than you.
That's
they're
worse.
You know what I mean, where you look down on them like they're some kind of like, I don't know, like they're not, like somehow because you're a performer or an artist or whatever, and I've seen this happen, man, and it's fucking gross.
It's
and
the worst.
There's no excuse. I've seen like comedians, you know, I've seen comedians treat fans who are just coming up to them to say hello, treat them like they were fucking dogs in the street. And it's sick, man. Especially when some comedians that I've seen do that. I was at the Comedy Store once, and no matter what you think about his comedy, Robin Williams is one of the great comics. It doesn't matter if you like the comedy or not. Robin Williams is a legend of comedy. He's been in countless movies. He was like selling out arenas, and he's an awesome guy. So he was at the Comedy Store. This is like, you know, he's like one of the forefathers of this craft, right? Here he is, and like I remember looking at him, and he's having a conversation with these two people who are clearly just tourists who happen to be at the Comedy Store, walking down next to the building, and ran into Robin Williams, which for them is probably one of the biggest nights of their lives.
Yeah.
For them, if they're really into comedy, it was for me just running into the guys like a big moment. I don't forget it, but I'm watching the way he's interacting with them, and man, there is no trace of. Of bullshit. It's not like he's in a hurry trying to get out of the conversation. It's not like he's like not listening. It's not like he feels like he's holding court. They're telling him a story and he's looking them in the eyes and just listening to it as though he was talking to his best friend. That's fucking Robin Williams, yeah. God damn it. If you're some like, just because you had a couple of Comedy fucking Central specials and somebody come, you know what I mean? We're talking about one of the greats, and he's treating people like his brothers and sisters. There's no excuse for anyone else to be that way, especially when they're the ones who are building your fucking mansion and dream. And so anyway, I, you know, somebody else who's really, really like got that ethic is Rogan.
Yeah.
Oh my
Rogan
God.
Rogan is amazing.
Yeah,
about that.
He'll wait till the line a thousand people long is done. I've seen it. It's unbelievable.
Exactly. Yeah, because he understands that it's like,
you
know, we're all the exact same thing.
Yep.
And it's and also, P.S., generally, like people that you meet out on the road, they will tell you the smartest, most life changing stuff. They'll like, you know, they'll have something that they. When my mom was dying, man, and I was touring. Probably after every show, somebody would come up to me and say something that like made me start crying. And then I'd have to like, because it's like the end of a comedy show and you're like, you're like crying because someone's like telling you some beautiful thing about either a loss that they've experienced or how to like, or just like what I could expect or ways to deal with what's happening. So it's like, yeah, man, if you ever get to perform for people, it's just like, God damn it, man, you are lucky and just better treat it like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's an honor. And that's one, in fact, when you mentioned Joe, I love Joe to begin with, but seeing him do that, seeing him literally take half an hour to walk 10 steps as in a hurry and he's trying to do something, but still, he'll take the time and take a picture with every single person.
Yeah.
That gives me... If for whatever reason I didn't like Joe to begin with, I think his comedy sucks, I don't like his art, whatever, I would look at that act alone and immediately I would just change my mind.
Yeah,
and have nothing but respect.
And then when you look at like fucking Avril Lavigne, did you see that shit? In Brazil, she was charging $250 for a quote photo opportunity with her, and she like made these fans stand, they couldn't touch her. So there's all these awkward photos of Avril Lavigne standing next to these fans.
Who the hell is that even?
Avril Lavigne
some
is a
little Pop-Tart star.
Yeah, she's a singer. But it's like, when you fucking see that, that, when you see that warped thinking, which is like, not only am I going to charge money for my tickets, not only am I going to charge money for albums, not only am I going to just juice every bit of money I can get out of these fucking people by selling whatever it is I'm selling, I'm going to fucking make them pay to get a picture with me?
Where they stand a foot away from me.
At least for 2-3 feet, like you over there.
$250.
That's ridiculous.
What? What are you doing? That's it. That's insanity, yeah, that's that you would try to, like, you would do that to these people.
But, you know, even on a small level, even without going, like, big celebrity level, something much, much smaller and yet the same dynamics. I see in teaching college, one thing that I notice is the most typical characteristic, I think, in people teaching courses is they absolutely despise their students. One of the most common themes I notice among professors is the typical thing that they do when they talk to each other is whine and bitch about their students. Like,
right.
Can you believe my students now? They are not the way they used to be. They are so lazy. They are so entitled. They are this, they are that. Yeah. I'm like, motherfucker, somebody's paying you. Somebody put money every month in your bank so that you can go up and talk about stuff you like, and that's your entire fucking job.
Yeah.
How dare you complain about your students? Your students are the reason why you don't have to go whole call somewhere, you know?
Right.
That's, so to me, that I don't even care who you are, how smart you are, whether you are a good teacher or not in the classroom, that automatically marks you as you are a fucked up human being.
No,
because
shit.
They're just no... Like, I don't care if I have students. To me, if you're not able to get the best out of students in that interaction, it's your fault. Because you're the one who's running the show. They are there for you, waiting to do the thing. If you can't figure out a way, not their fault. It's yours. And you should treat it as... Like, to me, when I walk into the classroom, I think the shittiest day that I can have teaching in the classroom is better than most days and most jobs.
Yeah.
So how dare I be all whiny or I'm tired or I lecture on this already a million times. So I don't feel like it. Just shut up and get on with it, because this is, you are so lucky that you should just kiss the ground where these people
kiss
walk.
Kiss the ground. And now guess what? If you don't teach, kiss the fucking ground, because we're on a goddamn planet that is in the middle of a vacuum that somehow is growing life. So how about that? We're in a, you know, floating in this fucking hole, and we're on one little pebble that seems to be creating orgasms. Let's be thankful for that. Somehow in this giant void that could be inside a black hole, there's a tiny little pebble where you can have orgasms. Kiss the ground for that. You know, the and if you can't find the gratitude, if you can't kiss the ground, don't beat yourself up about it, but you can actually start saying thank you even if you don't mean it, and somehow you'll start feeling it. You know, it's weird. If you're just like, even if you're all numbed down and pissed off, you can still be like, thank you for giving me this nervous system that's allowing me the possibility to experience anything at all, because this is a pretty incredible high, even though at this very moment it may not be the best high. Maybe this human fucking this human powder that I snorted back when I was whatever I was, floating in Alpha Centauri, this part of the trip might not be the best part of the trip, but I'm getting to trip, and that's kind of awesome, because apparently this drug in the universe, the human drug that the universe can take and turn into a human, it's rare. We can't find it anywhere else, so we got a hold of some good shit, man.
Yep.
This is like finding, like, being a human being, it's like equivalent to like going back to Millbrook and digging up one of Timothy Leary's alleged troves of Sandoz LSD and getting a taste of the good shit. That's what being a human is, except it's not LSD, it's this neurology that we've managed to get entangled in. It doesn't last, just like any other trip.
Right.
We know we're going to come down in 80 years, the high is going to wear off, praise God, and we're going to be able to resume whatever activity we were engaged in before we snorted ourselves. So,
or put another quarter in and get another hit of the plutonium Nyborg this time.
Let's try it again,
and off
man.
We go.
You know what? That's
this would last 2,000 years.
Yeah.
All right, let's go.
You're chasing the dragon, man. Cool. Oh, man, shit.
You need to run.
I gotta run.
I want to thank you, because you know, this was, you had 7 million things going on lately, and
my pleasure, man. It's good to see you.
So thank you for making the time, driving to traffic to make it happen.
No problem, man. It's great to hang out, and thank you for letting me be on this great podcast, Monsieur Balali.
So there he goes, like a shot out the door. I mean, literally, that was it. He had the split. So that was the whole thing.
Dan can always speak fast. This time was even faster than usual because he's like, damn it, there's no time. Let's make it happen.
I think we got an hour and 20 minutes worth in our 47 minutes. So
yeah, so
not trying to short shift you at all, Chimmy. He's just a great guest, and it just seemed like the perfect sort of matchup for what we're doing. So we're not trying to shortchange you at all. We wanted to find the best we could, and it seemed the perfect match, and I think your dad would appreciate it.
Big time. So thank you again so much for sponsoring the episode. Thank you, Goon, to you guys who are listening. And we're in the process right now of trying to figure out other ways to make sure the show is viable, and I know you guys have been supporting us in so many ways, and we deeply appreciate it. So the best thing also, just tell people, tell friends, use your subtle power of persuasions to convince more people that it's may not be a waste of their time to listen to the podcast.
Friend, ever since I started listening to that Drunken Taoist show, I seem to be getting a lot more girls.
Precisely. And if your subtle power of persuasions do not work, I would say that a 44 Magnum may be the way to go. Just, I'm not above putting a gun to anybody's head, say, listen, or else. There was an awesome story about Howard, the creator of Conan the Barbarian, who used to tell that the way he wrote Conan is that he saw this shadow as he was writing. He was there at the desk writing, and he saw this shadow of this humongous man carrying an axe next to him, and he didn't want to turn because he was afraid that he strongly believed that there was a spirit there that was going to kill him if he didn't do as he said. And basically the spirit said, write, and he would tell him to write all night long, stay there right next to him, and then at dawn when the sun comes up, he would disappear. That may be what you need to conjure to convince people to listen. Or,
yikes, I would just sneak to your mom's house and download an episode or two while she's not looking.
Yeah, that works. That may work better than conjuring the ghost of Conan the Barbarian. Is that really what he said?
Like, all those books were written with Conan's axe?
Yeah, again, I don't know how much there's legend and how much is real.
It's a lot of pressure.
It's a hell of a good legend, I tell you that much. That's... In any case, you guys have a wonderful day, and thank you so much for listening.
Happy bonus episode. And so ends another awesome episode of the Drunken Taoist Podcast. Be sure to keep your ears peeled for another mind-expanding episode coming soon. We'll be tweeting you as soon as they come out. You can keep track of Daniel at dbolelli. That's dbolelli. And you can find me on Twitter at richimon1. That's richimon, the numeral 1. See y'all soon.
In questo caso le provvidenze di Dio.
Duncan showed you the way, huh?
Oh man, isn't that scary to think?
Nice. So don't kill people, do that instead.
This was great. It's fucking awesome. Get back to work!